I have read thoroughly through all the documentation and the presentations made. And I do believe that there is merit in both the presentations submitted. Both of them have an element of constitutional amendment that would be required. And I therefore believe that that one should look at the principle, which is at stake here, and in view of that, I would like to propose that we adopt the principle that the rights should not be unfettered, but that we don't venture into constitutional review, because that is the mandate of another committee, that we then put forward the principle of some other regulation or curtailment to the Constitutional Review Committee to see to what extent they could deal with the detail of the proposed suggestion from the relevant from both the proposals, legislative proposal. Thank you.
From
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir, we from our side obviously would have preferred to adopt these two proposals, but we understand the constitutional problems with that. So I'm all that position by support like that. We would support Killian's support, but we'd rather forward these two principles of two suggestions for the constitutional review committee. Further consideration there.
Honourable,
yeah, I think I have another thing. I think it's up to this committee to direct the same proposal to any other committee here. Constitutional review, practice, or whatever it is. In my view, undoubtedly that new proposal in a constitutional review. So it should never come to this committee in a very, very way. That is the view of the presidency. Justice Department. It is a view of a constitutional expert, Professor from UCT. Can you just read you quickly what he says? The provisions of the bill would probably not pass constitutional muster. An ordinary law, okay? An ordinary law, which is what Mr. Self is proposing, to limit the almost unfettered powers granted to the President by the Constitution. This is a consequence of the supremacy of the Constitution, and the Self seems to be sadly unaware of this. In other words, the experts, the departments, the consultants agree that the proposal should not have come here. It's an attempt to amend the Constitution via the back door. So really, I want to say that we deal with that with that particular proposal. Be the same. Yeah, and if Self wishes to do so, nothing prevents him. Yeah. Of the Republic of South Africa versus Hugo, which we all heard about last week, from Justice and from the Federal Institute, which in terms of that judgment, the President has to act within the Constitution. If he does not do so, he's open to the meeting. On that ground, I don't know, but others I am going to. For those two reasons, that at this committee now is in position to reject both the proposals.
Further input, Honourable Sassimo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to concur with Honourable Anthony, taking from the input that was given by the stakeholders that we invited. Out of all the input, I really feel we need to, not even to refer it to constitutional review.
That concurs that we have to.
Any input? Thank you, Chair. Actually, I probably started on Mr. Lill and then just combined it with Honourable Self's proposal. So I was the one who had started the process incorrectly. However, I just want to say that I hear what Honourable Ainsley is saying. However, we also have to, if we compare apples with apples, we should make sure that if we look at other countries where the right to pardon exists, and is exercised by, for instance, the monarch in the UK. We also have to look at the rest of the constitution. And in South Africa, there are two distinct differences in South Africa. In the first instance, we are a new democracy, a young democracy. We don't have precedents that have been established over centuries, guidelines that have developed. Secondly, the type of constitutional democracy that we've embarked upon is of such a nature that the doctrine of separation of powers is a very strong element. And to a certain extent, we still need to enact that in many respects in this country. So the argument that was put forward by Mr. Lill, that as it is at present, it could actually result in a situation where after a lengthy judicial process and after the case was carefully analysed and the victim side was also carefully assessed, a court comes to a specific conclusion and thereafter the person just simply applied for pardon without any set guidelines on which grounds those pardons would be assessed. There's no criteria, so therefore it is simply one of those unfettered powers which could be abused in the situation as we find ourselves. So from my side, I would have to disagree with the proposal that we reject both. The process we could still discuss, you know, whether it was the incorrect process, because my understanding was that this was the committee that would just scrutinize a legislative proposal, go into it, get all the sort of background information, and then decide is there merit in the proposal, and thereafter it be dealt with by a specific committee, because I doubt it if this committee would ultimately possess all the knowledge to process, for instance, even amendments. Okay, we are going to have the proposals on the proposed amendments to the Land Bank Act. But it's very difficult for this committee to have the knowledge of all the legislative frameworks which actually are guided by the different ministries. So therefore my argument would have been, but I hear what Mr. Anthony is saying, his proposal was duly adopted, and therefore I would like to just say that I would like to move a counter proposal that we adopted. In principle, the fact that it should be curtailed, and that we then move to inquire about the right process. Should we then embark on that ourselves? You're saying it should have gone to the Constitutional Review Committee in the first instance. It's fine, that could be done. But just the principle, I would like to support strongly. Thank you, Chair.
No,
I'm really covered. My problem is that although we support both proposals, the overwhelming evidence against it given by the state law advisors, himself personally and the presidency, makes it difficult for us to say that we should go the route of adopting it. So, what if I don't agree with Ms. Amy's proposal that we reject it outright, I can see where Ms. Killian, where she comes from, what she wants to achieve in the process. I'm just wondering whether the ultimately can't be some sort of compromise that although the majority of the committee will reject the proposal, that at least in the report say something along the lines that there could be merit in these two by referring it to the constitutional review because it affects the constitution. And not simply say if you take it outright, we at least say what reasons they are.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm aligning myself with the previous speaker. Chairperson, I want to stress it out that we are not going to compromise. We are accepting.
Honourable
Speaker. Yeah, I just want to remind the members that in spite of being a new democracy, we have to make law, we have to make a constitution, and that constitution has to go through thorough research what other countries have done and to improve on the. And therefore, you can't say that because we are the new democracy, we cannot make the law correctly, and we cannot follow the constitution. Because we all the laws that we make in the country, we usually copy from other countries, and we try to improve what the other countries have done for us to move forward as a democratic country. I think that's the point.
Level,
you know, it's an interesting debate, and I don't know if we had time, it's quite fascinating. But it's very interesting that Mr. Searle draws almost entirely on the British monarchy and says that Britain's part and has its two roots. Yes, it's true with a new democracy. But what is quite fascinating is that our own indigenous law, which is the great pity that Mr. Searle did not research, in our own indigenous law, there are fascinating areas of pardon. For example, King Shaka. Yes? King Shaka misdirected. King Shaka had a very fascinating, and people can read up on a very fascinating system of thought in his society. That's going to take hundreds of years. So, yeah, modern democracy, yes. But pardon goes back in our culture many, many hundreds of years. Two, I don't think we must confuse the thing of pardon and separation of powers. It's quite clear the court cannot pardon. That is not, that's not the authority. That can't do that. That's only the president can do that. There's no confusion about separation of powers. And his power is not utterly unfettered. What he acts within the Constitution, he doesn't, but his actions may be refused. So I want to stick to my original proposal that for those reasons, we reject both proposals, and Mr. Self in particular, as nothing prevents him from proposing the Constitutional Review Committee.
Thanks, Honourable Member. It is true that after we received the presentation by forward to Honorable David and myself. And also Department of Justice Presidency and then to the State Law Advisor. Upon conclusion of the presentation, I'm sure you would recall that Honorable Delil upfront indicated that she didn't done her work, you know, up to that expectation. And then she was then saying, maybe we didn't inform her that she should acquire the advice of the legal person. That to me, it was conceding to say the presentation she made was not impressive to the one counted by both Department of Justice and the State Law Advisor. That therefore, immediately, my readings out of that, she on herself withdraw the presentation without saying it, you know, in ultimate end. But that remark to me then clearly said she felt it's not enough to decide either way around. I think the emphatical points that they were presented by all presenters in that day, the center question was first, you know, to deal with the constitutional power as outlined in section 84(2)(j), which falls within the category of the powers that are solely given to the head of state. And the impression we were, you know, given was that the exercise of pardoning by the president emanated from, you know, his office as the head of state. And in that regard, it then sends a clear message that as a head of state, there are some decisions that, despite the fact that from time to time they may account to parliament, he does not necessarily have to acquire any advice, acquire any recommendation. However, our understanding is the rationale, the you know, faithfulness of you know, good decisions taken, looking into the legality of the matter, the time spent on applying their minds, all those are the factors that influence the South African populace when decide on who should then lead the country. Therefore, the point that was emphasized by state law to say the people of South Africa have allocated some you know function to the president based on the confidence illustrated through democratic process of election. It is then saying the people of South Africa have given Section 84 a go-ahead to be retained in the Constitution as it is. And then we thought that therefore those were the reasons that makes Honorable Delil to feel she doesn't have, you know, to continue on the matter up until and unless in future she then had to apply her mind and do intensive research before she can challenge that other issue. Taking into consideration the presentations of Honorable Self, clearly he did, you know, some analytical work and arrived at where he was to say, while I am agreeing that the power of the president to pardon should be retained, we should then find a way to, you know, enforce some sort of accountability, some sort of, you know, transparency in the whole process. And then that make him to insist that there is a need to have some sort of a regulatory form to regulate the power of the president, which again, I'm sure as you deliberated the issue of saying, if you were to do that, it might then create a presidency also, to say it means the entire A up to K of Section 84, A up to K, would require to be regulated equally, so that there's no, you know, discretion of the presidency any longer without due consideration of that particular, you know, processes. That therefore, I would want to believe that sitting where we are in terms of Section Rule 235, we should pronounce whether we agreed or not agreed. And I think what I've heard in when you deliberate here, it's just one thing to say agreed, not agreed, but the principle is there might be some legitimacy that the possible, you know, portfolio committee might look into. But sitting where we are all agreeing that we may then give our opinion with recommendations to say maybe the justice portfolio might be the one to deal with that, but not necessarily us. And then, of course, we are required then, in terms of 4 and 5, to pronounce whether we give go ahead. Giving go ahead, it means we then said self should then proceed with the sponsoring the regulations as proposed, and not giving go ahead with recommendations. It would then said we rather said no, we should not, he should not go ahead, but rather referred the whole submission to the constitutional review and justice and development portfolio committee for their consideration, which they might arrive at a different opinion than ourselves. That therefore I want to draw our summary towards saying we would then arrive at not giving the go ahead with recommendations to either both of the two committees that I've made mention of. That's my reading out of what we are talking about, because all in all we are then saying on ourselves to say continue, basing on the fact that if I have touched the ones that you have touched, it doesn't give us, you know, a good standing. At the same time, total rejection, of course, on Delil, I'm saying we are going to say no, proceeding should be given. But on self, I'm saying we rather say no, but we recommend that it goes to be considered by the sister portfolio committee.
Just to get clarity, the way I read the rule, the 235(1) is that it's obligatory for this committee to consult the relevant portfolio committee before we get to a final decision. Now, I'm not sure whether that consultation has taken place, or whether we are talking now on based on the feedback from justice, or what's the situation here?
Thank you. I think we did. We communicated with them. We do have their letter, I think, to say they couldn't attend, and we even gave them, you know, an open opportunity to say make a submission up until today if anything that you thought you might want to talk to, and that they haven't yet responded, I guess. The impression we had is to say, rather, we then, from where we are sitting, if we then said, we recommend, so this is, should be one from. I thought it relates to the two portfolio committees. It's not. It's about members. I'm saying my understanding for them by now not sending us any submission I want to assume that they couldn't find any reason to pay. Maybe because they apologized on the day of submission that they are not going to be there. Therefore, they had no, you know, clue of what exactly transpired in between. So I think if we referred to them for exploring the matter further, they might then have been obliged to go into depth of the matter.
Yeah, I'm hearing what you're saying, but I don't think a committee can take a formal resolution on such an important thing based on, you know, hearsay and things like that. I think what we should be doing perhaps is delay a final decision on our stand and our viewpoint here until such time as we at least have something in writing from Justice to say that they also feel uncomfortable or they reject it outright. Then we have further background and grounding to take the decision.
A proposal here to say while the summary tears down to make sense, let's give the two portfolio an opportunity. Let's not, you know, just presume that they accept by not writing anything. Second to the move.
Honorable, I'm very, very reluctant to say it is really true. This has been going on for some time now. We've had very high level injustice from the presidency. There's literature available on the issue. Now, that was mean and nasty, but I think the supporters of Mr. Silk's proposal are just playing for time, you know, in the hope that possibly this committee would see its way clear in supporting the proposal. But I suppose strict adherence to the rules, Mr. Pretorius is quite correct, perhaps we cannot move formally to reject these proposals, but I'm very sorry, until we maybe have to force. If justice does not respond, well, then maybe you check and have to force some kind of response out of them so we can meet that requirement and then meet again and formally reject the proposal. But really, in my own view, on both proposals, we have sufficient input now to make a decision, but if we have to strictly adhere to the rules, well, that's useful. So I second very grudgingly.
Yeah. I understand that you also look at the rules that they emphasize the consultation with the portfolio committee. We should force them that tell us, even if you said no, we've got no comment, say no comment, then we'll know that.
What do you do if they still don't respond?
Okay. Honorable Dre.
Jefferson, can I just say that I believe that it's important for us to do it procedurally correct and to follow the rules. So I therefore, less grudgingly, support the notion that we must just get something in writing. And I would like to suggest, should we not be practical and say we're now in the process of recess, but then we say to the chairpersons of the portfolio committee, and we keep a paper trail of it, we say, here was a request from this committee that you respond to this and that you make a final determination in your committee on this matter and report back to this committee. And we say by the end of April, or we say by the middle of May, that we know that there's an end to the process, but then we have a paper trail, we've done what the rules expect from us, and then we can then proceed from there. So I just want to keep that open so that from our side we are not seen to just ride roughshod over the rules of Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Fisher.
I understand the move there of this issue, but I think as a committee we have a right of taking the decision. This is one. And then if we have to pursue these other two committees, it is for us to say that the majority decision that was taken here was this. And then we say what we say about that. We go to them by having told them that we have taken this issue. So that's the point.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Any
other point? Comment? I think I'm trying to, you know, when these legal people are not here, sometimes become a fool. Because I do know that there is a clause which obliged us to consult with the portfolio committee responsible for the work we are dealing with. It says must. I don't know of that particular clause, but I can't see it now when I'm...
Can I assist you? 235.2.
235.2.
But can I just further while on my feet, I speak, just say
I think it's right. Can we look at, if you have got the rules? It says the committee must consult with the portfolio committee within whose portfolio the proposed falls. So it calls that we must. Of course, if it wasn't raised amongst ourselves, we would have been going forward. But the fact that we have raised it, I would agree that let's give them that opportunity up until the 23rd of April.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't see any need of continuing this argument, because as the ruling party, we have taken the decision. As I said earlier on, that we are not prepared to compromise, so we are rejecting both proposals. Thank you.
I agree with that sentiment, Honorable Daga, but we are saying let's follow what the rules said we should do. Rule 35.2 clearly said we must. We have given them a letter. They might have not. When we send them the second letter, we will quote this particular clause that they are making us not to take a decision because they are not talking. Whether they are saying continue, we have got nothing to do, it is up to them. The decision that we will take, but informed by, we have followed all what the rules said we should. That's what I want to say.
Chairperson, I think we agree with you, but there may have to be a plan B. I have been on this committee for some time, and justice has a habit of not responding. And I don't think there's anything in the rules there which allows us to force them to respond. What action we take if they don't again respond? So I think plan B ought to be, maybe, that you start consulting your legal advisors and perhaps the speaker to establish what course of action is open to us if again, and given the prior practice, justice in fact does not respond.
Thank you. This is a helpful, you know, move. In the process, while we are sending them letters, we will then explore these other avenues to say, are we in some, in case they don't respond, are we then have to sit and say, no, force them to respond, we cannot take a decision. Of course, we will be on the next meeting after the 23rd, of course, in which we are giving them as a cut-off date for them to respond. We will then be, you know, looking at they haven't, this is what we can do in case they haven't. Can we then make a progress in that regard? Honourable, anything?
Sure, I think that's 100% correct, except to say that letter of the justice needn't say or shouldn't say that the this committee has already taken the decision. No. That decision follows what follows their input. Although the decision might be the same as you're talking now.
I think we agree that we'll then take a decision in the next meeting for taking into consideration all what we have already raised. We will just, you know, look at the submission in case they do. Honorable
person. We'll take the decision immediately after getting the response from the other friend.
Yeah.
Progress. We have dealt with both the two, the 3 and 4. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much. We are now inviting our own honourable member Pretoria. I'm not sure whether we should give him a handy welcome in this in this regard, but nonetheless, honourable member, you are called to take a lead now in this regard and present your case.
Chairman, thank you very much for the opportunity. It's an honour for me to do this, and before I do it, let me take off my hat as a member of this committee and sit here as an ordinary member, trying to impress upon my colleagues in the committee that proposal that I will be presenting is a reasonable one. I believe it's reasonable. I believe it's not a political one that way. And I say that in the light of your remarks at the end of the previous meeting that we sit here as a committee, not as party political people necessary. Although that's not responsible, we know that. This proposal stems from a problem that the Agricultural and Finance Committees experienced in the Joint Committee end of last year, in September last year. Some of you might recall the issue of the land bank. The land bank traditionally fell under the Department of Agriculture and reported to the Agriculture Portfolio Committee. But because of a long history of mismanagement at the bank, to put it now very mildly, the bank was moved, or the power to, you know, the bank was moved to the authority or the control of the Department of Finance and the Treasury. So since July 2008, the bank falls under Treasury. Although their clients are agricultural people, the Treasury is the responsible department for that. Every member should have my memorandum in front of them, and the heading is called amended, because there was a previous one which I withdrew to bring out an amended one which I feel is much more reasonable and should hopefully find favour with the majority of us here. Now the object of this amendment is to propose an amendment to the Land and Agricultural Development Bank Act, Act 15 of 2002, to allow the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee under whose jurisdiction oversight over the land bank falls, in this case it's the Finance Committee as I've just mentioned, to play a meaningful part in the process of selecting and proposing candidates for appointment to the land bank board. Now the problem area of the current Act, you should have copies of the Act, is Section 4. If I can just refer you to Section 4 of the Act, Section 4.2. Section 4.2 deals with the procedure to fill a vacancy on the board. The subsection enjoins the Minister to call for nominations by publishing such vacancy in the Gazette and in other appropriate media, and by written invitation to the relevant portfolio committees. If I read the relevant subsection, it says, whenever it is necessary to appoint a member of the board, the minister must, by notice in the Gazette, as well as in other appropriate media, and by written invitation to the relevant portfolio committees, call for the nomination of persons who are not disqualified in terms of Section 10 to serve on the board. Now this created tremendous problems for the two committees sitting at the time. And under the heading Practical Effect of Current Provision, I say further, Section 4.2 is vague and gives no indication of what the role of the committees in the process should be. At most, the committees are required to engage, presumably jointly, in their own separate process of identifying possible candidates, and to either ask them to apply directly to the minister or to act as a post office to receive such applications and pass them on to the minister. The current provisions of the Act therefore limit the parliamentary committees in their oversight role. So just to interrupt myself, the whole intention with this amendment is to strengthen Parliament's oversight role, to take it away, to take the absolute power away from the minister and dilute it a little bit, to give some to the committee. It is also not clear which committees could be regarded as relevant. I will speak about that later on again. Now the proposed amendment, it is proposed that in the event of a vacancy, the relevant portfolio committee shall be mandated to recommend suitable candidates for approval by the National Assembly and for submission to the Minister. The final power to appoint will remain with the Minister. So I'm not proposing that the Minister's power be taken away totally. The Minister will still make a selection ultimately, but the selection will at this time be from a list provided by the committee. The portfolio committee process will involve selecting the names of candidates that the committee will interview from the list of nominations called and received by the department, as well as any other candidate which the committee might otherwise decide on. The committee will interview selected candidates, agree to a short list of names. That could be and then present those names to the National Assembly. To the minister. That could be in random order or in a preferred order. You can actually say to the minister, we prefer this order, but it needn't be. And then ultimately submitting a short list of names in a report to the National Assembly. Once approved by the National Assembly, the minister then appoints a board or members from the board from amongst those names. So although it's not a requirement at this stage of the process to come with the actual bill, I've tried to draft the bill to make it more clear what the ultimate change could entail. This hasn't been cleared by any legal advisor. It's my own work, so it should obviously be subject to changes. So I would say Section 4 will be changed as follows. 4.1 will remain exactly the same. 2, whenever it is necessary to appoint a member of the board, the minister must by notice of the Gazette as well as in other appropriate media. We take out and by written invitation to the relevant portfolio committees, and the rest will remain exactly the same. So the minister must by notice in the Gazette call for the nomination of persons who are not disqualified in terms of Section 10, etc. Then the underlined part indicate new additions to the bill. So these will be new clauses. The minister must inform the Speaker of the National Assembly in writing of the vacancy, and I want to add there, submit all nominations received. In other words, the minister must inform the Speaker of the National Assembly in writing of the vacancy, submit all nominations received, and request the National Assembly, request that the National Assembly presents the minister with a short list of candidates. Four, the Speaker must refer the request and nominations. The Speaker must refer the request and nominations to the relevant portfolio committee, and the committee must thereupon engage in an open and transparent process of selecting candidates for interviewing candidates and finalising a shortlist and submit such a shortlist to the National Assembly. Then 5, apart from considering the nominations called for and submitted to it by the minister, the portfolio committee may consider any other nomination. And the portfolio committee might have also candidates which they feel are suitable. They may bring that into the equation as well. And then the shortlist goes to the assembly. Number 6, once the National Assembly has approved the shortlist, the minister shall be obliged to fill a vacancy from among such names. 7, if the portfolio committee is of the opinion that no suitable candidates are available from among the nominations submitted to it or otherwise received or considered by it, it must recommend to the National Assembly that fresh nominations be called for, and if approved by the National Assembly, the minister must forthwith call for fresh nominations. Now, under 8, I say the procedure set above shall not apply in the case of the appointment of an employee of the bank as an executive director, as envisaged in section 8, 3 and 4. In 8, 3 and 4, the minister has the power to, or the CEO of the bank is ex officio an executive director, and the minister also has the power to appoint another employee of the bank as an executive director. That's the minister's power, he should retain that, and the committee has nothing to do with that. But it will apply. It shall apply in the case of the expiry of the term of office of an ordinary board member. So what we are saying is that after the 5-year term, the minister can't simply reappoint that person for another 5 years. A vacancy will occur after 5 years and the process will have to be followed. That essentially is the way I see the amendment. Just to make a couple of comments about the wording relevant portfolio committees, I must say I now have a little bit more clarity on what the intention of the lawmaker was when the words relevant portfolio committees were used as to when I wrote this thing initially in September last year. But my concern was that committees which presumably could be regarded as relevant include the portfolio committees on finance, agriculture, forestry and fisheries, and on rural development and land reform, as well as the corresponding NCOP select committees. Involving all these committees either jointly or individually would be impractical. The proposal is therefore, and that is still my proposal, that the Portfolio Committee of the National Assembly, under whose jurisdiction the Land Bank falls, be tasked with the process of nomination of board members. Currently is the finance committee. However, as an interim arrangement, now there's an argument of whether it was an interim arrangement, the moving of the bank to finance, but it's say it's interim. As an interim arrangement, since July 2008, the land bank has been moved from the control of the Department of Agriculture to the control of Treasury, and thus now falls under the jurisdiction of the Portfolio Committee on Finance. While this arrangement is in force, both the Portfolio Committees on Agriculture and Finance meeting jointly should be tasked with the process of nomination. I say this arrangement, however, should not be inactive. In other words, the wording can simply be the relevant portfolio committee. Everybody knows that is the department, that is the committee on finance. But in practical terms, because the client base reports to agriculture, those two committees would effectively, I guess, sit together to do the short listing. And the way I see it is that there would be no financial implications or no additional financial implications to the state. Only change could be that the financial burden for interviewing and so on will be shifted to Parliament and not necessarily to the Department of Finance. Chair, then I've dished out this morning an extra document called, it's one page, it's just called Additional Points, just to make a couple of further points, some of that could be regarded as superstition, but I just want to stress it. I say this is not a drastic proposal. It's almost of a technical nature, but the main intention is to bring Parliament into the process and to take away a little bit of the minister's absolute powers there. Currently, the minister has the sole power to appoint directors of the land bank. This proposal leaves the power in the hands of the minister, except that Parliament will now play. My proposal, this new one, leaves that power in the hands of the minister, except that Parliament will now play a meaningful part in the process of advising the minister as to who to appoint. The minister will now have to select candidates from a list approved by Parliament. The current wording involves Parliament almost as an afterthought. It places no obligation on Parliament to do anything, nor does it require the minister to give effect to and appoint any of the nominations submitted to him by Parliament or by the committee in this case. My proposal seeks in the future to meaningfully involve Parliament as part of the oversight function, and I've read the current wording as it stands there, section 4. Just a couple of further thoughts under number 3, relevant portfolio committees. The use of the term parliamentary and not National Assembly or NCOP could be interpreted that it was the intention of the lawmakers to involve committees of both the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. Legal advice might clear that up. My proposal, however, is that only the National Assembly be involved in the process. There are numerous examples where only the National Assembly is involved in board or other public office bearer appointments. Examples are the SABC Board, Public Protector, Auditor General, Human Rights Commission, Commission for Gender Equality, Electoral Commission, National Lotteries Board, Inspector General of Intelligence, Space Agency Board, etc. But should legal opinion indicate that both houses should be involved, the proposal will not need major amendments. In practical terms, it will then involve the relevant committees of both houses meeting jointly to finalise the shortlist, and then that shortlist should be adopted by each house separately, by the NCOP and the National Assembly. I'm hoping this, I'm saying the proposal should find favour, let me water down and say I'm hoping that this proposal will find favour with the relevant committees. The current provision of the Act was clear, it was heavily criticised by all parties in September last year when the committees met to consider a very late request from the Minister to supply them with names of board members. Members felt that they should be involved in a more direct and meaningful way, and that the committee should not merely be a post office for the department where nominations are received and passed on to the department. But Chair, let me just, by way of ending off, quote you one or two of the comments made by members in those two committees. Chairperson Lulu Johnson, for example, he likened the committee's role to that of a post office for receiving nominations and then having to hand them over. The ID said the legislation was flawed and had to be reviewed. Chairperson again said Parliament had to be able to determine its role, which had to be very clear. It was currently very fuzzy. Mr. Abraham said the Land Bank Act of 2002 needed to be amended and brought in line with the requirements of the present day. He did not think that Parliament's role should be merely to forward the nominations. So I could carry on. Mr. Dr. Rienge of ANC strongly recommended that the portfolio committees be part of the interviewing panel. Just two last ones. Dr. Mufamadi of the ANC, it was something that needed to be corrected beyond the filling of the two vacancies which applied at the time, because the role of Parliament could not be equated to that of any institution. Then the chairperson ended off by saying Parliament had to be on board and in full confidence be part of the process. So, number five, sir, in my view, a further point to consider is that procedurally, I believe it's wrong that communication between the minister and the portfolio committee cuts out Parliament, cuts out simply the House. It should be done by the House. You can't have a situation where the committee supply information to the minister straight without the consent of the House. I will end off by saying I believe this is not a drastic amendment. However minor as it is, will strengthen Parliament's oversight role and will lead to improved governance, and I therefore want to appeal to the committee to consider the proposal on its merits. Thank you, sir. If you have questions, I will try to answer them.
Thank you very much, Honorable Pretorius. Come again?
Stay.
I'm not sure whether you wanted to challenge the procedure I'm going to follow or what, because we have just received the presentation from the sponsor, and I'm not sure what the hand is for now.
Can I
speak on which item? I wanted to get it first. Where, in which item? No. I think it's wrong. Because we've heard the presentation. Is there any clarity seeking question? Not debate, please, Honorable Member. Honorable.
I find it quite interesting that the member made a specific differentiation between sections 8 and 8, 3 and 4 and 9, 2. And I cannot quite understand why he specifically said it will apply in the case of section 9, 2. Can you just please understand? If I understand what the reasoning behind this is that there must be a parliamentary process such as was followed in the SAPC, ICASA, and many of the other institutions go through parliamentary nomination process. Then interviews are conducted, and then a list is submitted, and the minister appoints. Now, once that process has been concluded, and that member takes up a seat for a period of 4 or 5 years, in this case, 5 years, it says unless that person is disqualified in terms of section 10, is it? Or was removed from the office by the minister, that member is eligible to serve another 5 years. Why would it be necessary, just a question, further understanding, why would it be necessary to make it applicable to that process again? I just don't quite understand the reasoning behind that, if we could just have an explanation.
I think the explanation would be that I'm hesitant, or I'm trying to reach a situation where a person doesn't get automatically extended from 5 year period to 5 year period. He must go through the process again. Nothing stops the minister from again asking that person to apply in the normal process, but the portfolio committee must apply its mind whether he's happy that person is qualified and suitable to serve another 5 years. If the portfolio committee puts that member's name on the shortlist, the House approves it, then certainly the minister may appoint him. Just to get back to 8.3 and 4, 8.3 refers to the chief executive officer, which the wording is the chief executive officer is a member of the board by virtue of his or her office. So that person is ex officio a member of the board. So the minister has no say in his appointment or not appointment. It's automatically there. And similarly, number four, the minister may appoint any other employee of the bank. So I don't think it's our function as parliament to interfere in the administration of the department to say the minister you can't appoint an official on the board. 9.2 refers to outsiders, if I can call it that. That's what we want to control.
Honourable Sasiba.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to know if this person will work on a contract of 5 years. Then, if he has just done well, then it could be recommended that he could continue for another. Is it a letter of 5 years?
The current wording of the Act is very clear. The person is appointed for a period of up to 5 years. So I would assume it's consumer practice the minister will appoint him for 5 years. If he is available to serve a longer period, then the proposal says that person must then apply afresh. Then a vacancy becomes effective after the 5 year period. There will be a vacancy. But he's not excluded again from applying and being appointed for another 5 years.
I want to know what the motivation is for this proposal. Why do you want this? Why are you coming with this proposal? Is it a commendable desire to extend the oversight role of Parliament? Or is it based on the horrifically poor record of this particular entity that you wish to put right? Number one. And number two, your proposal, is it based on any of the on the situation pertaining in any of the other entities and institutions and boards that you listed to? And so on.
The proposal stems firstly from frustration which the two committees experienced by not knowing exactly what Parliament's or the committee's role is in terms of the current wording of the Act, which is, if you look carefully at 4.2, it's very vague. It doesn't say exactly what Parliament must be doing. And secondly, it tries to strengthen Parliament's oversight role. That's the critical part. Parliament is supposed to have oversight over an entity such as the Land Bank, which coincidentally was a very bad institution. Could have been anybody else.
Awful.
That's a better word. So this process of having at least some say over the directors will ensure that Parliament has a better grip on the institution than previously. And your third question, I haven't mirrored this on anything else, but there are various other examples of similar processes where Parliament, where the Committee of Parliament plays a part in submitting names to the Assembly, which gets then adopted by the Assembly. Just the other point which I haven't spoken in more detail is the fact that, for example, if there are three vacancies, it doesn't mean that the committee must propose three names to the minister. The committee may propose any number more than three, at least three, but any number more. So the committee can propose six names to the minister. The minister still has the discretion to make up his own mind who he wants of that number. So we're not taking away the minister's powers at all. It's really saying to the minister, Parliament feels these are qualified people, make your pick from them. In some cases the committee may say we would suggest to the minister the first three, or sometimes we've been random.
Two things. In the light of the realignment of government, which you have raised as a concern to say you are not sure of the three that it will fall, and then the fact that you have acknowledged that the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture has been raising this concern. How do you then envisage them dealing with the holistic challenge faced by the same piece of legislation vis-a-vis the portion of Section 4 that you wanted to deal with?
I think so. The wording will be remain the same as currently, that the relevant, I would say the relevant committee, parliamentary committee or National Assembly committee, that would be my proposal. But if legal advice in any case that both houses should be involved, then certainly the committees, the wording can remain the same. The relevant parliamentary committees, and relevant in terms of my latter understanding of the process, that's the legal position, is relevant means the committee to which that entity reports, which would be in this case the finance committee. But I'm saying because everybody knows that agriculture is really the committee effectively working with the land bank on a daily basis as a client, you would find in practice that the finance committee would hardly go into a situation where it would on its own do that screening or select. They would involve, it would be an unofficial situation that they would involve the portfolio committee as well. But legally, they are allowed to do it on their own. So finance committee is the effective committee in this case.
You know, why I'm asking this clarity is precisely that as we are sitting now, we do know that the transfer of the entity from agriculture to finance was based on the capacity to manage and now in the light of the realignment that I've mentioned, are you not saying some form of re-energizing and holistic approach of, you know, the entire system to be amended?
No, sir, I don't think there's any changes there. Let me put it this way. If, for example, the land bank tomorrow moves to the Department of Land of Rural Development, you didn't change the law again, because the wording is the relevant committee. The relevant committee at that on that change would be Land Affairs. So that would, the wording would remain the same, irrespective of whatever realignment takes place of the entity. That is your question.
Thank you, Shepherdson. I don't know whether I have captured this correctly. If not, I would like you to clarify this question furthermore. If the minister still has still has to make her discretion, what is the point of appointing these people? So I'm not very sure whether I've captured your, if you can clarify further. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Honourable Member. First of all, the onus will be on Parliament to ensure that the correct people come onto the name for the minister. It would be a very brave minister who would go against the wishes of Parliament, first of all. Secondly, the minister won't have the power to go beyond what he has in front of him. So if Parliament presents the minister a list of four names and three of them must be appointed, only one, he has the discretion of leaving only one name off. So I'm not sure whether that's clear to the honourable member.
So are we not stripping her power?
No. You're curtailing the minister's powers a little bit, but you effectively giving Parliament much more power. The minister still has the final say who on that list will make it as final appointment. But the critical thing is not necessarily the little bit of power which the minister loses. The critical thing is the power which Parliament gains as oversight, because it's all about oversight here.
That's my view. My apology if you're going to take me wrong. You know, this is a comic. It's not like we are debating in the house. So we must try to open our hearts, you know, to each other. By the look of things, Honorable Pretoria, as you, the opposition party, in fact, the whole side of the opposition party, because you are singing the same song. What I've noticed, you are on a mission of stripping the president's power. Now you are again on a mission of stripping the minister's power. That's what I've noticed. So if it's not, you correct me or you convince me otherwise. I'm still confused. Thank you.
Thank you. No, it's just a perception. It's fine. You don't have to. It's not a clarity-seeking question. It's a perception. She suspects that the thing. Further clarity-seeking question?
Going to find out. The only thing that said, it will still be the prerogative of the minister to appoint. But he having consultation with their board, or their board is that there will be a recommendation from the board. From the from the portfolio committee, there will be a recommendation,
it will be
in consultation.
It will be a report from the portfolio committee to Parliament, to the National Assembly.
Yes.
That report will be adopted by Parliament. Only once the report is adopted by Parliament, then the minister must report it. That report will say the committee considered X number of applications. We propose to appoint, propose to the minister to appoint the following. To appoint from among the following names. Then the minister makes a choice on that once it's approved by Parliament.
Thank you. I'm sure. Maybe the last thing, clarify. You can take it first. Fine.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to clarify one other matter, and that is if we look at the proposed amendment, and I know we're not going to look at the detail at this stage, but just the principle, I'm just asking it. If there is a vacancy, in some of the other processes that is followed, what is interesting is, for instance, in the case of the SABC board chairperson and in the case of the ICASA council, the minister notifies the speaker that the vacancy has occurred, and then the portfolio committee advertises, and then the interviews start, and then from the short list which is submitted, in the case of the ICASA council, what is interesting is that they stipulating that we must make a shortlist exceeding the number of vacancies. But I want to ask him about this specific matter. Why is it necessary that the minister embarks upon the advertisement for the vacancy? Why is it then not entirely left? I'm just asking, why is it not then entirely left to the parliamentary committee to conduct the, you know, upon receiving the notice that there is a vacancy, that Parliament then exercises? Is there a specific reason why he has sort of proposed this process? Could I just understand that? Preface that with other processes.
I should quickly add on this, because it's related one way or another, to say the separation of power from the, you know, organ of state, being legislator versus executive, how do you envisage it in this regard? Are we not encouraging the legislature to implement and execute the executional part of the executive as we are coming from the area where we were debating executive versus judiciary. Now here, I just wanted you to clarify the separation of the two, the executive versus the legislature.
That's a very valid point, and I considered that carefully at the time. That is perhaps also the reason why I kept the administration part with the department and not the parliament. This is not an exceptional case. This has become the rule that Parliament involves itself in matters which perhaps 10 years back would have been regarded as executive functions. I'm not overly concerned that this process, what I'm proposing here, infringes on the executive side by Parliament. To answer Mr. Kidd, certainly we can change the law more dramatically and say that all the applications must be done by Parliament, but I'm trying to keep it as simple as possible and as close to the original wording by simply taking a little bit of the admin away from holding it away from Parliament and leaving it with the administration, but involve Parliament in the actual decision making process, but still retain the minister's power to make the final appointment.
Followed, and please, I'm sure you will be the last, and then we move.
Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe I missed it. Oh, can Mr. Pretorius tell them? Who does the advertisement? I'll make a follow-up question after this.
In terms of the current wording of the Act, the Minister, the Department does it, and that will remain the same, because the Minister must publish it in the Gazette, plus in other newspapers, and then inform the committee as it stands now. That was the vague earlier. We are saying that fine, the Minister keep on doing that, he advertises everything, but once he has the pack of 50 applications, he submits it to the Speaker on his way to the committee. The committee then have a look at those 50 applications. The committee does the interviewing and selection. The report to the House of Assembly, the report to say the committee proposed the following names. That report gets adopted by the National Assembly, and then the Minister, from those names as proposed to him by the National Assembly, makes the final appointment.
Because I thought you were saying that the Minister should inform the committee of the availability of the vacancies. Because I was then going to ask, then if the Minister to inform the committee and the committee to advertise, who then determines the specs? Because that's an admin, I believe that's not a political part, it is an administrative.
It's a technical thing, and there are very specific requirements in the current wording of the Act, what the people must qualify and what is qualified. So the Minister can't, he hasn't got leeway there to go beyond that. But the committee itself must adhere to those requirements in the Act. So you can't bring anybody in who does not, conform to the requirements in the Act.
Yeah, I think maybe we should confine ourselves now to the principles, the broad principles of the proposal. And there would all be nitty-gritty in the details later. If we decide to go ahead, because one of the things I think we may want to look at, and that is why I asked earlier on, is it based on these other boards, ICASA, SABC. It would be very useful to get some uniformity also. So later on, if we agree, and I must be honest with you, there's a lot to commend this proposal. It would be very useful later on to look at uniformity. If the SABC board does that, ICASA does that, well, why should the same happen across government? Why chop and change? But that kind of detail I'll share later on.
I think it's a comment. It's not a clarity thing. I would now request. I've noticed that only Department of Agriculture, Fishery, Forestry and Fishery, whatever you twisted it like, that present here. I must say, all stakeholders, including the portfolio committees. They have been invited, and communication was done verbally from one or two from portfolio committees in particular to say they would want us to implement section 235, rule 3252. To say they need to be consulted outside the presentation of the honourable member, they themselves with the committee, so which they have got the right to. We will then rearrange that. In our midst, it's only Mr. Daniel, and I'm sure his colleagues coming from agriculture areas. So they will comment. If they are ready to, we'll hear from them. Thank you. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honourable members, for the invitation to the Minister and this opportunity to make representation to the committee with regard to the private members' legislative proposal by the Honourable Pretorius to amend the Land and Agricultural Development Bank Act number 15 of 2002. I just want to put on record, Chair, that the Minister is in accompaniment with the President on the State of the Liberty of Uganda, and has therefore requested that I represent her here. The Ministry has taken note of the proposal, and it also has the benefit of the context as described by the Honourable Pretorius. Chair, I will not elaborate on the location of the legislative mandate as it stands. I think honourable members are aware that by presidential proclamation, the mandate now vests with the Minister of Finance, and it will continue to vest there until such time, if at all, the President issues a different proclamation. Just for the benefit of the committee, the Ministers of Finance, Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and Rural Development and Land Reform have been working collaboratively on issues relating to the land bank, whether born out of necessity or being proactive in terms of resolving some of the issues, one of which the Honourable Pretorius has clearly articulated. I can just report that most of the challenges pertaining to the operationalization of the contents of the Act as it stands have been dealt with, and Parliament has been taken along the process in terms of reporting to it. And I think we are at a point where we've arrived at a point where one can say that there's a comprehensive plan, call it a turnaround strategy, to deal with some or most of the challenges. Parliament itself, again, as the Honourable Pretorius has clearly articulated, in the execution of its oversight mandate, has identified a number of issues, in particular the one that he raises in the text of the Act, that expose a fundamental flaw in our view as well. We concede that the proposal speaks to and seeks to directly address the matter of the legislature's involvement in the appointment of the board of the land bank. Our view is that while this is understandable, and I've just stopped myself from using the word while we empathize with this position, because I think it's understandable. It's our view that it's not near enough. And in fact, Chair, if the Honourable Pretorius more pertinently responded to one of the questions that you raised towards the end, I would have declined, depending obviously on the response, to actually make any further input, because I'm sure I would have been covered. But the reason for our contention is that we find the proposal maybe undesirable is a strong word, but maybe lacking, or there's some sort of fundamental shortcomings in it, because it's seemingly ad hoc, addressing a single technical, even technical political issue, where a more comprehensive response is required. And I almost enjoyed the way that you couched the question, given the re-energization of government and the new strategic focus. There's a comprehensive legislative review underway in all government departments. These processes are driven by ministers themselves, so they are not technical necessarily by nature, and not simply because they involve policy issues, which are in the domain of the executive authority, but also because of the strategic focus which you raised of government. We believe it has shifted a gear up from merely service delivery to increased service delivery, more effective and efficient service delivery, transformation-orientated service delivery. Service delivery, Chair, that reflects the developmental mandate of the developmental state that government is committed to. So as part of this internal legislative review process of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, which seeks to make recommendations regarding the repeal, amendment or abolishment of acts dating back as far as 1935, we have also embarked on a prioritization process, because obviously it's a bulky body of legislation that forms the mandate of the department. So this is, of course, to organize our work in a programmatic fashion to achieve certain outcomes within certain specific time frames. The DAFs position on this act in particular is that it's not aligned at all to the paradigm of the developmental state. In fact, I've just perused it again, and most of the progressive issues, if not developmental, are contained in the objects of the act. The rest of it is very technocratic, and I concede again, Chair, that it is a financial institution, or it is a piece of legislation that governs a bank, but still, banks in a developmental state should, in fact, reflect that mandate. We agree that the Act is sometimes vague, as the Honourable Pretorius was saying. It's our contention that it's not as clearly instructive as it could be or should be as far as the developmental mandate is concerned. It, in fact, and this also came out in a number of meetings of the relevant Committee of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, also in the newspapers, and also on those farmers who are on the books, among those farmers who are on the books of the bank, it poses an obstacle course instead of providing an enabling environment for small or new agricultural entrepreneurs who are generally black. There is the chance that this may be the result of practice overtaking or replacing the theory contained in the law. We have, in line with our internal processes, accorded the review and proposed amendment of the Act high priority status, because government wants to achieve exactly the matters I just raised. The minister has, in this regard, written to the relevant portfolio committee to inform them of the review process generally, because it will obviously impact on their workload, but also specifically about their prioritization of the Land Bank Act specifically. The minister's view is that the Act requires a much more comprehensive overhaul if it is going to reflect and strengthen, critically, the developmental mandate of the government to contribute meaningfully to the transformation of this highly untransformed sector and to elevate agriculture into a highly productive, nationally and globally competitive industry that simultaneously provides food security to all our people. In this regard, the new Act would be and should be part of a basket of legislation instead of standalone that is geared to achieve these strategic objectives. These, Chairperson, Honourable Members, are the main reasons why we find it difficult to support such a narrow a proposed amendment to the Act. We feel it doesn't go far enough. In fact, we feel it doesn't go far at all in terms of achieving the transformation agenda of the developmental state. We feel that any legislative proposal to amend the Act should aim to meaningfully transform the sector, modernize the industry, bring a better life to all South Africans, especially those living in the remotest corners of the hinterland. We do, however, Chair, want to say that we realize the division of organs of state, division of power, and we don't want to be seen to be an impediment to the right of Parliament to propose and indeed pass laws. We just want to caution that the net result might be that you'd have a process that results in an amendment followed by an amendment followed by an amendment on the same principal act. I in the last week or so, I haven't really had a chance to look at what that means in terms of resources of the state and so on. But in short, Chair, we think while it may be timely, this proposal, because it fits into our time frames as well, it's not practical. I don't think it's warranted to pass a narrow amendment as proposed by the Honourable Pretorius. but the amendment should form part of a more comprehensive overall process. And you will notice that I've not even spoken specifically to the text of the proposed amendment, because we should, I think, and I believe the committee and the relevant portfolio committees would interrogate and seek to assist the Honourable Pretorius in strengthening even the technical text. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm sure what he's trying to say is to say this submission forms part of their holistic approach. It becomes relevant in what they are doing, but Honourable Emmett.
Okay, you say, the gentleman says that the overall of the Act, in the overall of the Act that you're now considering, what role do you envisage Parliament to play in the appointment of the board? What are you considering in that regard? Number two, can you restrict yourself to the principle in Mr. Pretorius' proposal that Parliament should have a greater say in the appointment of the Board of the Land Bank, as Parliament has got in a number of entities, SABC Board, Public Protector, Auditor General, Human Rights Commission, Commission for Gender Equality, Electoral Commission, National Office Board, Inspector General of Intelligence, Space Agency Board, etc. Why should Parliament not have a similar role in appointing this board? What is special about the Land Bank that you seem very hesitant about Parliament playing any greater role in the appointment of this board? What's so special?
Honourable members, I must apologise. I had to leave, and you know that my leaving the chair, it has got an implication on the work of the committee. Before we deal with this area, I wanted us to settle as Rule 130. Which is required to decide on an acting chairperson, because I should lead. May I then call for the nomination for
the Honourable Whip of this committee.
The Honourable Whip of the committee, seconder. There you go. Any objection?
No.
Nothing. No. Thank you very much. I'm handing over to Honourable Sasibo to lead the committee in my absence. I have in fact communicated with her. She knew that I was going to be. So thank you very much, and wish you all the best in finalizing the debate of the day.
We're not allowing the chairperson to leave because she never tendered an apology.
No, I didn't at the beginning. Check what your documents you see my apology.
Just as far as this high priority is concerned, could we just perhaps get a sort of also a timeline, you know, a time frame when they want to come forward? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I have to apologize to the Honorable Ainsley. My pen didn't want to work during the first part of his question, so I'm forced to ask him to repeat that. But in terms of the second, more pertinent question, I think I've tried to end off my initial input saying that honorable members would have noted that I have not even begun to address the text of the proposed amendment, because we've taken this principal position. But I think the Minister is on the record, Honourable Ainsley, that she indeed, in principle, supports the view of Parliament. The various committee chairs have raised this matter with her. She agrees that it's problematic, and I think the principle of uniformity, as expressed here and in other committees, are the one that she supports and endorses.
I'm quite happy with that answer, but may I repeat the first part of the question? You say you're overruling the Act. Do you envisage at this stage a greater role for Parliament to play in the new Act, in the appointment of the board? And the other question, by when will you complete this exercise? What is your time frame?
Thank you, Honourable Ainsley. I think the second, or the response to your second question goes some way in responding to your first question, because we are saying that we concur with the view of Parliament that the as the Act stands is problematic. Also, the principle of uniformity. So we envisage a much more meaningful role for Parliament in this process. In terms of the question on the timeline, both the Honourable Killian and Ainsley, maybe I should just explain some of the logistics or operational matters. We've established under the legal services in the department a task team drawn from both institutional experts who are working with the various mandates in the various acts, as well as industry and academic experts. And maybe as a matter of interest, we've even found one of the drafters of one of the oldest acts in our mandate to share ideas on how it could be amended to fit into the new paradigm of a developmental state. In terms of this process, we are at a point where we have, in fact, categorized, in terms of our prioritization, the various high priorities. The minister wants in the book year that's on our doorstep to at least pass 10 of the 20-something pieces of legislation, take it through the parliamentary process, and because the Land Bank Act is a high priority act, it would be part of that 10. And then the priority, as in not high priority, would be, there would also be a batch of 10 proposed or brought to Parliament in the 2011-12 financial year. Thanks.
May I just make one or two comments? I'm not going to argue the old argument you could be today to stay discuss the very something proposal. But while Mr. Daniels is still here, just to say that I don't want to get into the whole thing of a developmental state or not. My intention was not to get onto the political field of this thing. It's got nothing to do, as far as I'm concerned, with the developmental state. It's simply trying to get Parliament as a bigger role in the process. So the only thing that changes is that the minister has slightly less power and Parliament is more. So if that is containing the developmental state, then I'm very sorry, but that wasn't the intention to even get onto that field. Second worrying aspect to me is the fact that we're getting the argument now not from Treasury, who controls the Act, but from Agriculture, secondary to bottom. But be it as it may, the argument that there's a holistic legislative process ongoing in the government, and therefore we must keep that in mind. If that is the case, then one questions the need for this committee to have a role to play in this institution. Because then it means that we must wait in all cases rather for the holistic thing of Parliament to come with legislation, and this committee will have reduced the body. I hope it's not so, but I'm getting the gist of the argument that we must hold fire because there's such a process going on. And then just a third point to say that I accept the Department of Agriculture's view, but this is not the department that we need to consult with. We need to consult with the Department of Finance, who administers the Act at the moment.
You want to
hello, Chair. I actually think it's I realize it's not questions or comments, but I think they beg the response. I would be reneging on my responsibility if I didn't. I think. And maybe I didn't say it specifically, but we are not saying that the proposal by the Honourable Sir Corey
seeks to curtail the developmental state. What we are saying is that it doesn't speak to this new mandate. It doesn't take it into account. It doesn't contribute to achieving that. So we are not saying that the proposal per se is curtailing the imperative of a developmental state. And just in terms of being a secondary department, we are more than happy with the statement. And Treasury, indeed, according to our invitation, was invited to be available for the committee to be consulted. But the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries was also invited to give an opinion. We do have an opinion. I've shared that with the committee. I wasn't aware that it wasn't required. Otherwise, I suppose we would not have responded to the invitation. And I also just want to reiterate, Chair, that in my presentation I did say that the executive does not have the right to, nor does it have the desire to, impede on Parliament's role and its powers to propose and pass laws. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. I think we have just had, we've got the information from the department. As we have already mentioned that we had already invited the Treasury, I think before we say anything, let's hear the briefing from the Treasury. Let's invite them again so that we can just then listen to both. Then it will then let the committee will take the decision. Are we agree on that? Oh, thank you.
I agree with you, but you see, other than the PMG representative, we are the oldest members of this committee, and she's a member of the committee, she's always and Chair, this has happened for 10 years, you see. The work of this committee is held back again and again and again because portfolio committees don't respond and departments don't respond. Really, we've got to look at that. And yet again now, we're being held back because Treasury is not here. So really, we've got to be a little firmer, I think, with these committees, portfolio committees and departments. And honestly, look at the rules, because the rules are really tethering us, they're tying us down to that consultation. There's nothing in the rules that says, what do you do? If you simply cannot, despite your best efforts, you cannot get consultation out of anybody. But yes, I agree with you. I agree with you. We can't proceed until at least we have the Treasury looking at this thing.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Cindy August. I am the parliamentary liaison from the South African Revenue Service, and I'm just here as an observer, just to, because Ghost Tembekile Plaatje is currently, he was up in Limpopo province. However, we have communicated with the chair from the minister's office, requesting the minister just to give us an apology. We first sent an apology and to request the committee that National Treasury will be available for the next meeting to come and do a comprehensive presentation in this respect. So I just want to correct the perception that National Treasury hasn't responded and we just ignored the committee. The minister is he really takes Parliament very seriously, but we have tended through the secretary of the chair and the chair himself, we called, just to indicate that we won't be available today for this meeting. But all the observations in this meeting have been recorded, and it will duly go back to the relevant officials within the National Treasury, and we will be back on the 7th of May as to your next meeting is. I just need to confirm with the Secretary in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that explanation taking us
while it's recording, can I just make the comment then that it also gets recorded for Treasury's purpose when they respond to us, that they at least come prepared to tell us how my little proposal influences the development of state or influences the development state in a negative way. I need to know that because that's beyond me and beyond my understanding at the moment.
Honourable members, I think let's pause on that on the proposal of Honourable Pretoria on the note that we will invite the Treasury for the next meeting. Then once we have got the date, the Secretary will deal with that. Let's continue, Honourable members, to item number... Sorry? Are we having another one? Another meeting? Okay. To item number, adoption of the minutes of the 12th and 19th. Minutes of the 12th and 19th. Too many people. Let's check that. Minutes of the 12th.
Listen, just a comment. It's so extensive. I hope it's fine. I unfortunately could not attend those two meetings because I had another portfolio committee meeting. But they seem to be from, you know, very extensive. So I just wanted to commend the staff for this. Well, the other members will have to determine if it's correct. I can't speak if it's correct, but it's just I just wanted to make the comment that they seem to be very good minutes.
Right.
I haven't got a set of bills in front of me. If my apologies are there and I wasn't present, good. If they're not there, please, I did apologize.
Right, let's look at the minutes of this first. Page by page. The correcting. Page one, any correction? These minutes are in front of us. Okay. Page 3.
Clarity seeking question, Chairperson, is under item the page 5, 2.2, must be 2. It's just a paragraph before 2.3 issues of the committee under the third parliament.
Do you say
page 5? Yeah, page 5.
2.1.
It is the very last paragraph before the paragraph 2.3. It starts with a wording. The guiding mandate of the committee.
Is
the guiding manner to the committee should also be kept in mind when considering petitions. In terms of the guidelines, the committee research and legal advisor, you've got.
No, if I may, because page 5.
No, page 4 in the middle. Mine printed out, sorry, the indifference.
Page 4 in the middle.
It's just because it's printed out from. Yeah. Sorry, Chairperson. I was worried that it might be a different page. Okay. Page 4 in the middle. In the middle of the very last paragraph, just before you move to 2.3. I just wanted to ask the guiding manager of the committee. Yeah. To check whether all possible legal avenues were exhausted by petitioners. I just had a little bit of a question. Does it mean that we will not consider a petition unless people have gone through all other legal, and to what extent legal, does it mean legal proceedings in court? If I could just get a better understanding, please. I'm so sorry that I just needed to have the background.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Member, yes, some of the petitions, as they come, we do find that they may not have exhausted the other avenues. It's not necessarily just the legal routes per se, but in this instance, we were actually speaking to a petition that had the legal context to it. But however, they do sometimes, they haven't exhausted all other avenues. Hence, it would take us back to what we discussed during the strategic planning, that we need to ensure that Parliament would become the last resort. We need to just check that all of that has been exhausted initially. So maybe it's just with the wording that we need to properly work that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other? Seeing that no matters arising,
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm sorry, maybe this was covered in the last meeting, which I didn't attend. But I would like to find out what are the developments with regard to the study tours and the video conference with the Canadian Parliament.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Members, we have had discussions with Canada. The initial reason why we couldn't set up a program for a visit in March was because their parliamentary committees were suspended and they have to be reconstituted, and they indicated that this will only be completed by the end of April. So that we can only possibly foresee the video conference being set up with the committee early May, possibly middle May, because the committee members first need to be identified for us to at least set up a worthwhile interview. Otherwise, the only people we can talk to is basically the officials that perform my role and the researchers' role on that side. So they have requested that we wait until that has taken place. And also, we did communicate to the UK and Australia at a stage. They all requested that we consider taking the study here in the second half of the year, which would then be in July after the World Cup. And I have been communicating with them as Chairperson Tobajani has requested. I've sent a request for them to indicate or to communicate to the relevant committee and then come back with those committee programs so that we can see which dates fit our committee to set up a program in a specific week. But I am waiting for their response to identify weeks that would, for which they would be able to accommodate us. And I will communicate that to the committee as soon as I have an answer.
Thank you very much. Before you...
Let's hear from the researcher. She wants to add something.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Members, also just the other thing that we looked at was the parliamentary program that we have of ours. And it has actually come to our attention that most of the work in terms of the travelling and all that, we will be only allowed to do it after the 11th of August, which is the time that the official FIFA World Cup period ends. So with that in mind, we're hoping that with Canada we can be able to secure the video conference with them earlier than the 4th of June, if possible, because
because the identified dates that we had for the next term meeting are the 7th of May, the 14th, the 21st, and the 28th of May, and as well as the 4th of June. But however, we're also waiting, as Barbara has already mentioned, that the other countries will be the ones that give us an indication of when they can accommodate us, because we don't want a situation where we identify a date, we start working on the processes, only to find they cannot accommodate us around that particular time. So once they've done that, we will definitely ensure that the members can get a program that then states out the proper dates and of the intended visits, but we will also incorporate what is being stated in our own parliamentary program.
Thank you very much.
For that information, maybe we can excuse Honorable Ndaga. She has requested to be excused at 11. She's got another appointment. Honorable Skita?
Yeah, I can
Maybe I didn't hear properly. Did you refer to the 11th of August or 11th of July when the official FIFA period comes to an end? Because Parliament starts again 14th of July, isn't it? So it's only until then that we cannot engage on a sort of an oversight trip. Is that correct?
Thank you. I will first respond to Honourable Killian's and then to Honourable Fischler's comments and questions. What is happening is that we have, even though the World Cup ends on the 11th of July, there's a month, according to the Act of the World Cup, that the month is being, the rest of the month, up until the 11th of August, is being set aside in terms of the travelling and everything that FIFA has to do. So even though Parliament will be working and doing all the work, we need to also look at that and be mindful of it as a committee, that it might actually affect us financially if we're going to push during that period, that we might end up not being able to take the number of members that we're planning to because of the costs during that time. So that is the angle that we took it from, that we looked at that. And to Honourable Fischler's comment or question is that, yes, there will be a rollover, and currently we're actually working together with the committee section just to see if we cannot secure the funds, and as we can just look into saying, can they be aware of the rollover as a committee, and therefore kindly requesting that the amount that we had set aside, that we had actually planned to use, can it at least be put aside, because these are matters that are beyond our control. We cannot be forcing to go to a particular country to do work if they're not really yet ready to receive us. So we're working on that, and we'll definitely keep the members updated on the process. The process already started, the letters are ready, we just are waiting on the supervisors to look through them and assist us in that regard. Thanks.
Let me find out, is it possible to do it?
Honourable Member, honestly, where we're sitting at, it's very difficult to say yes they will, yes they will not, but we are trying. We have the letters drafted, we sat together with the secretary and looked at, you know, giving all the reasons as to why the study tour could not take place as initially planned to be used, for the money to be used from this financial year. So we're just hoping, and we might may perhaps come to a point where the committee chairperson then might have to give even more support to the reasons that we've given in there, because we do not really know what will be the outcome once the letters have been sent through for that particular request. So we're not really sure if they will allow us that, but we don't really see as a problem that if we're given those reasons, because it's things that we couldn't control, they should really be considered, and the committee might then need to be the ones taking it even further to say, but these are valid reasons. Thanks.
Can I make a proposal that we just get our paper trail again in motion, and with strong motivation, with reasons beyond our control, we couldn't embark upon this tour, and that we should be prioritized. Too often have I seen in the past, Madam Chair, that when it comes to the new year, it's the same old story. There's a beautiful expression to say, the baby that that is crying the most on the back of the mother gets the food first, or a wheelbarrow that is squeaking the wheel. So we must just be there, Chairperson, that we're not falling behind our request, because all the committees will push. And I think we've argued last year already that we actually need some guidance to really fulfill our role more effectively.
And over and above, we were supposed to take it
Thank you. I would just like to add to what Kalumia said. We are trying, and it also speaks to Honourable Killian's suggestion, we are trying in the letter, which will be directed to the NA House Chairperson, to indicate that the specific reasons that Canada, Australia, and England have given, and I also have the contact people of the different missions and their parliament. So if it comes down to them wanting to know, you know, who gave the decision or the reason that we can't come, I can actually provide that information for them as well.
Thank you very much.
I propose the adoption of the minutes of the 12th. I can't propose of the 19th because I wasn't present.
No, then let's come to the 19th, minutes of the 19th. We'll do the same, page by page. Then we have the right. Right, from page 1. Page 7. Almost everything that
Sabra.
Can I just say that it is wonderful for somebody who must sometimes split him or herself and not attend all the meetings to be able to catch up.
Yes.
Prepare before the next meeting. So thank you very much.
No, thank you. Right.
Honorable Peter.
No method arises with the proposal of what was Comrade Honorable Entry, the second Honorable Secretary. Thank you very much. I think that we come to the end of our meeting.
Maybe some are not affected, but it's a request or a proposal that I make from this committee that we be written letters to take to, is it Home Affairs? Some of us for application of for official passport.
Oh. We remember that we honorable members we received a letter that we have to bring. We were still thinking about maybe it was going to be successful our thing. Then we said we must bring our document and then Babla is going to organize it for us. Those who doesn't have their passport.
I will members, thank you. If if any of the members still need the letters, I can request that from the international department to have on the second floor. The only request that the Department of Home Affairs has here on the in 120 plane. Is that because they need to take every member's fingerprint, every member will unfortunately have to go see the official website and just for that, because they won't allow me to take it and bring it to them. And also for signing, and it's for official purposes, unfortunately. But all the admin I will assist with. And photos will have to be taken as well. If copies need to be made of anything, or if forms need to be collected, or any assistance administrative wise, I will be able to assist them.
Yes,
so
that's why I was
asking
to the
Honourable members, welcome to an end of our meeting. I leave you we're closed today for only 2 weeks.
Two.
No, you go to your constituency from your house, not from Parliament. Drive well, stay safe, work very hard. For only those 4 days. It's only 4 days in your constituency. Did you take it?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.